Looking for a new 1500 Silverado? Shop Beatty Chevrolet and get 2.9% APR for 72 months on a new 1500 Silverado. Or if you want a new vehicle and a Chevy Equinox LT fits your lifestyle, check out Beatty Chevrolet's lease option on a 24 Equinox for only $325 a month. And as always, buy with confidence with the Beatty Warranty for Life. Beatty Chevrolet on Parkside Drive. Online at BeattyChevrolet.com. Beatty Chevrolet, locally owned and operated for over 90 years.
We begin hour number three of Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. Heather Harrington is here. Joel Silverberg. I'm Josh Ward. We'll be with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Sports Talk will take over 1 hour from now. Heather, we've talked a lot of NFL with the playoffs this past weekend. One more game to go in the wild card round between the Rams and the Cardinals tonight, and then it'll be divisional round time. We've also talked Tennessee basketball for the men's team. It did not go as they hoped on Saturday. Now, we knew going in it would be a tough game for Tennessee, but probably tougher than most would have expected. That's an easy thing to say when the score was 107-79. But, man, that was an impressive showing by Kentucky. Offensively, Tennessee was able to do more, especially shooting the basketball, than we've seen a lot of times this season. But on the other end of the court, Tennessee's defense has led the way. That was not the case in Lexington.
Yeah, it was definitely not. I liked the fact that John Calipari talked about it after the game. He went out and told the guys to start the game. They were going to start in a 1-3-1 defense in honor of Joby Hall, who had just passed away. So that was really interesting. He said if they are able to make it to the hoop twice, he goes, just go man to man. So they had an alternate strategy as well there to start the game. But when you look at it, Kentucky's defense and then their fast break opportunities were just unreal. 32 points off of turnovers for that Kentucky team, 27 of those on fast break points. It was really wild. Rick Barnes talked about it in the post game that to start the game, Tennessee just needed much more defensive intensity. Some of that is just Kentucky's good. I mean, you know, Ty Washington, he just is really good. Sevier Wheeler being able to go was a huge positive for those guys. And man, he's like a little round bowling ball, just fast, was so pesky. I thought he did like a lot of really nice things. And then Oscar Tshiebwe dominating inside, and Tennessee just not able to do anything there. So it was a bad matchup kind of all the way around, and things really snowballed out of control for Tennessee early on.
So Tennessee's now 2-3 in conference play, all three losses on the road against quality opponents. Alabama to open SEC play, and that was without Kennedy Chandler and John Fulkerson, then at LSU, and then this past weekend against Kentucky. And the performance by John Fulkerson and Olivier Kamwa, not good for Tennessee in the post at all. And everybody recognized that during the game. And the record's not where Tennessee hoped that it would be. It's also January 17th, and there's a long way to go as far as the NCAA tournament and trying to make a run there. But what about the position Tennessee is in? Rick Barnes talked about that after the game on Saturday, handling adversity. It's something Tennessee's done well in the past and will need to again.
Well, we're a pretty good team. We get our back against the wall. We've always been that way. And again, there's a lot of guys. I've said to you guys before, I mean, we got our tails kicked today any way and every way that you could. But other than that, we've had chances in most every game we've been in. Again, I would say Villanova game, maybe not. But we got today what we deserve because we did not execute defensively the way we're capable of. But again, I don't want to take anything away from Kentucky. They're shooting the ball well. They're a team that they bought into their roles. I think they're playing their roles very well. But hey, it's a long way to go. And I said before this, you know, I wanted us to play our best game today, but I think that we're going to be better a month from now. And that's what. And again, we're still in good shape with where we are. But we're going to find out about a lot of different things. Like I said, I think some way, somehow, we've got to change the vibe with our team. And what that may be, I will determine that more after I watch the tape.
That was Rick Barnes on Saturday. They will definitely need to bounce back from this one, and they get an opportunity tomorrow against Vanderbilt. You can try to split against LSU this weekend. Heather, if Tennessee goes 2-0, people are going to feel better. But, you know, I said this last week. If Tennessee goes to Rupp and plays well, people are going to feel better, and it didn't happen. So at some point, you need the results to come, and I think everybody recognizes that especially Rick Barnes and his team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think with Vanderbilt having woes, it is really weird that they're 0-2 at home and 2-0 on the road in the SEC. That's odd, but it plays into Tennessee's advantage, hopefully with the game tomorrow. And then having the opportunity, we talked about it right after the LSU loss, which LSU, another great defensive team. We'll see how well their shots travel coming up to Thompson Bowling Arena, because they enjoyed the home shooting the first go round. I think there's a great chance that Tennessee goes 2-0 and we feel totally different than we have this last kind of 48 hours for this Tennessee team. When you're looking at Vanderbilt, the biggest obstacle that Tennessee is going to have to overcome is just Scottie Pippen Jr. I mean, he's kind of the do-it-all man for that Vanderbilt team. How do you see Tennessee playing him defensively, Josh, and who needs to basically step up to make sure that Scottie Pippen Jr. doesn't have the ultimate success in being able to lead his team to a win over Tennessee?
Yeah, he's such a good player. You hope that you're better on the perimeter. I mean, there will be a lot of talk going in of Kennedy Chandler and Scottie Pippen Jr. Player of the year going in, and Kennedy Chandler, one of the top prospects in the league and one of the best point guards in the league. So I'm sure that they've already looked at what happened with what Wheeler and Ty Washington were able to do on Saturday and said, okay, this can't happen with players moving forward, starting with Scottie Pippen on Tuesday night. So he can have a good game and you still win the game. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to completely shut him down. He's a terrific talent. But I think they'll play better. I think we'll be talking on Wednesday about Tennessee's defense looking more like itself than what we saw against Kentucky. What Kentucky did, they still had to hit shots. There aren't going to be many games like that at all for any team, especially teams Tennessee faces.
Yeah,
Tennessee, I think, still has one of the best defenses in the country.
Yeah, and that's why I keep using the term snowball. I just felt like it got out of, like, the momentum got, and Kentucky did. It was like in the tip-off, they didn't just grab the ball. They went and grabbed all the momentum of the game, and things just got really out of control for Tennessee so early on, and kudos to Kentucky for being able to do that. I mean, at one point during the first half, they were shooting like 80% from the field. Like, that is not going to happen night in and night out for those guys. Great performance by them. Everybody is definitely talking about it. I saw Gary Parrish and those guys note that was a historic beatdown for Tennessee. Tennessee will have the opportunity, though, to get some payback when Kentucky comes to town later on this season. So we'll see how the conversation changes over basically, I think, the next month and a half until they get here. But this Vanderbilt game falls into that taking care of business category. When you look at their KenPom ranking, this is a team that Tennessee very much should beat. So it's like, if Tennessee takes care of business versus the teams like Vanderbilt, Florida, Texas A&M, which might be a little bit of fool's gold right now, as they're still undefeated in SEC play, but they're ranked barely in the top 60 according to KenPom. So we'll see what they actually bring to the table when they come here. But taking care of business against those teams, at least splitting with Arkansas, you're still in a really nice situation where you're a good seed in the NCAA tournament, and the ability to go on a run is there. Maybe not a deep run, but a run.
Yep. Tennessee looks to rebound tomorrow against Vanderbilt. We'll talk more about that as we come back, checking in on the SEC in football heading into the 2022 offseason, which is now underway. When we come back with Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward on 99.1 The Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward, Joel Silverberg producing, as we have 45 minutes to go before Sports Talk will take over. And we go to the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline to welcome to the show Mike Griffith, covering Georgia football and SEC football at the AJC and DogNation.com. Mike, we appreciate the time. You covered a national championship win for Georgia last week.
I did. It's been a long time since I've covered one of those as a beat writer. So it was interesting. Lucas Oil Stadium was a good venue. Thought that they did a nice job up there, and there was a lot of Georgia fans, probably outnumbered the Alabama fans, at least 3-1, if not 4-1. So big win for Georgia. They end a 41-year drought, and now they go about the reloading, rebuilding process. A lot of attrition, and you guys probably saw the news that JT Daniels headed for the transfer portal.
Yeah, I wonder what is going to happen with Stetson Bennett. Was still a year of eligibility. Is he going to opt back in, try to go back-to-back? What is JT Daniels as a quarterback prospect in the transfer portal right now?
Well, I mean, I think he's ready to go. I think he'll be an immediate starter and put up some pretty big numbers wherever he goes. I mean, he's a prolific drop-back guy. You know, he's one of these pre-snap read guys. Gets out of trouble before he gets in trouble. Quick release, makes all the throws. A pretty phenomenal quarterback rating. You know, Tennessee was on his list first time around. Obviously, Tennessee in pretty good shape this time. Michigan was on his list. Looks like Michigan has a pretty capable mobile quarterback. They got one other quarterback transferring out. I'm not sure where JT lands, but there'll be no shortage of folks that are interested in what he brings to the field.
What does Georgia look like with what is returning? Nolan Smith coming back is big news, right, for the defense, but also players who are leaving either through the NFL or every team deals with the transfer portal. So how does that look, as you can tell right now, for Georgia?
Yeah, pretty big reload on defense. Now, Georgia plays a lot of guys in games, usually 23 guys rotate on defense. That's one of the reasons, you know, they don't get as worn down from the hurry-up teams or the super spread teams, is because of the depth they build. But you're losing a lot of guys. I mean, they're probably going to have, I would say, 12 or 13 guys picked in the NFL draft. They'll probably lead the country. And a lot of those are coming off defense, particularly in the front seven. So I think right now you're looking at three returning starters on defense. The offensive line is going to be massive. It's going to be incredibly talented. They got pretty much all their top skill position players back. And the offense should be really, really good. I think you'll see a different quarterback. I'm not sure what Stetson's plans are, but I know that Brock Vandergriff is a redshirt freshman, five-star, that's bigger, stronger, faster, better, could be ready to take over it. And I wouldn't be surprised if Georgia added a quarterback in the transfer portal.
Do you think Stetson Bennett should come back?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what his expectations would be. I'm not sure, you know, how determined he is to finish his career as a Georgia football player. A lot of people were surprised he came back when he exited spring as the number four quarterback. I mean, this is a guy that threw four passes in the spring game, and one of them was an interception. You know, I think JT threw 41. I think the number two guy threw about 30. And then the Brock Vandergriff threw 9. So, you know, I think Georgia was ready to move on. The coordinator was ready to move on, and Stetson went to Kirby and wanted another chance. And I think he went into fall camp as the number three. But when JT got injured early in the season, I don't think any of those young guys were ready to take over, and Stetson played well. And so, you know, he became a viable option, and JT came back and played really well again and got hurt again. And then Kirby put Stetson in there and kind of stuck with him for the sake of continuity. So I don't know, Heather, that's a tough question to answer because, you know, Stetson's a national championship quarterback, but he's not necessarily the best quarterback on the roster going into next season. So he may want to go somewhere else and prove that he can play. He may want to hang him up and be a GA and launch a coaching career, or he may want to come back and compete for the job. But, you know, that's any way you slice it, I'll have something to write about.
No doubt. Mike Griffith is with us, DogNation.com. So George will be the preseason pick to win the SEC East next year, deservedly so. What do you think about the competition to at least be the top contender, the number two team in the East going into next season?
Yeah, I mean, Florida's, you know, in a major reload. They're working the portal effectively. They got one of Georgia's, the guy that was projected to start at cornerback, Jalen Kimber, transferred there a couple of days ago. I don't know how quickly the Gators can reload. I don't know what they're going to look like. You guys know I'm bullish on Tennessee. You know, Hooker was amazing. Heupel did an unbelievable job. You know, just the energy that I felt around Tennessee this season and what I saw. And in a way, I'm still not real pleased with the Music City Bowl, but in a way, that may sharpen the Vols a little bit more. That's going to be a pretty angry and determined football team this offseason with a lot to prove and with good leadership. So I think Tennessee's the number two in the East. I don't really see anybody else that – maybe Kentucky. I know their quarterback's back, but I kind of feel like Tennessee kind of got that series, you know, back in order this year. So I think Tennessee's probably the two, and then you're looking at Kentucky, Florida battling it out for that third spot.
Mike, when you look down the road over the next 5 years, how many times will Georgia and Alabama not only play in the SEC title game, but the national championship game as well?
Wow. Well, I don't know if we're going to see this again for, you know, I just, you know, because next year is Alabama's year. I mean, they're just, you know, they're the best. I mean, I was listening to Kuiper, you know, talk, and he was saying that if Anderson and Bryce Young could have came out this year, they'd have been the first two picks in the draft. And, you know, that Alabama team is, it was young this year. They're going to be loaded. You know, they're going to be the prohibitive SEC favorite. They're going to be the national championship favorite. And the Ohio State is also going to be, you know, pretty good. Those are, to me right now, would be my two front runners. You know, I suppose there's a chance, Heather, that we could see those teams play again, but, you know, I'm not so sure how firm the grasp is beyond the next 2 years for either one of these teams. Things change fast now. The transfer portal, injuries. I mean, you saw that with Georgia. I mean, you know, Georgia's cruising along, beating everybody up. And then, you know, they get beat 41-24 by Alabama. Now, had Georgia slipped against Clemson or slipped in another game, they'd have been out. That'd have been it. That'd have been the end of the story if they had one regular season loss. But they had a little bit of a margin for error being undefeated, and there not being another undefeated team out there. So that was kind of a unique situation. The playoff deal with the ACC holding that up, you know, that's just amazing. You know, to me, the dynamics of the politics that are involved with the playoff expansion, and I'm sure you guys talk about that a lot, but, you know, Clemson missed the memo. You know, they're not the team anymore. Like, those guys that Clemson had been getting to win titles and compete, those were guys Tennessee used to get. And I think with Dabo losing both of his coordinators and Clemson slipping, I don't think they're going to regain their footing now. And so I think the ACC better be careful what they wish for, or they might get shut out of the playoffs entirely for the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, what do you think ends up happening? What's a realistic timeline, both with the playoff expansion? At some point it probably happens still, right? But when could that happen? And then we're waiting on when Texas and Oklahoma will officially join the SEC. What do you think of that conversation right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I talked with Bill Hancock in Indianapolis, and he's a wonderful guy. He really is. They get like the most honest, wholesome guy ever to run this thing because they know that it's so convoluted. He himself is a wonderful guy, though. And I said, yeah, so I guess we're not going to have a playoff until at least 2026. He said, well, not necessarily. He said that they're going to meet again in the next 3 to 5 weeks. And obviously, you know, Clemson is voicing their concerns, or excuse me, I should say the ACC. It's kind of interchangeable, right? Clemson, ACC, Ohio State, Big Ten. I mean, these are the teams and programs that swing the big stick. You know, they're going to meet, and their concern is with the number of games that the players are playing theoretically. Listen, we know what this – it always comes back to money, doesn't it? It comes back to money, and let's just say it. If ESPN wants it bad enough, then the money's going to come and the decisions will be made and the concessions will be made. And Sankey, you know, he appeared here at the championship celebration Saturday, and he made kind of a sly comment. I think Commissioner Sankey's run out of patience. He said, I think the 4-team playoff worked out pretty good for the SEC. Wouldn't you fans agree? You know, it's like, okay, we get it. I mean, the SEC sitting there going, we can stick with 4 and there'll be 2, or, you know, you guys can wise up and have 12 and then have some teams host and maybe get more teams in. But right now, there's a lot of politics involved, and college football is getting kind of sticky.
What do you think is the thing, the biggest pressing matter right now for college football to maybe figure out this off season and this kind of downtime before next season hits?
Well, when Nick Saban said that there needed to be some legislation where name, image, likeness, and transfer was concerned, I said, "Oh my goodness!" I said, "That is a red flag. If Nick wants rules written, that tells you everything." Because there's nobody better, to his credit, at working in the gray than Nick Saban. I mean, he's been an innovator. He's been ahead of the pack in everything. But in this deal with that Texas oil money, Nick knows, you know, that Texas and Texas A&M are in premium position, you know, to buy more players than anyone else. And now we can say that. I mean, we'd always whispered it. But now you can come right out and say it because it's legal. And what's happening, your schools are procuring money for NIL agreements, essentially to pay players. And so there needs to be some sort of legislation, you know, some sort of framework and parameters for college football to proceed. I mean, how is this going to work? I mean, you've got side hustles going on now with former players setting up chat rooms with players. And so now fans pay them to get to the players instead of making donations to the university to attend functions. So, I mean, this is just, it is truly the Wild West out there. And the hope, the thought is that there could be a commissioner of college football. And if we could, you know, if we could duplicate Greg Sankey, that would be great. But I think ultimately he may end up the commissioner of college football because there does need to be some leadership and there needs to be some commonalities to level the playing field, at least enough where these other conferences feel like they can compete with the SEC. Because what they're really saying when they don't want to progress with any of these rules is we can't compete, so we want to take our ball and go home. That's what they're really saying with these decisions.
You can read his work with the AJC and DogNation.com. The offseason is here, Griff, but that does not mean the storylines are over. They might just be getting now that the offseason is here in the SEC and in college football. Thanks for the time, as always, and we will check in with you again here soon.
All right, appreciate it. Have a great week.
Thanks, Griff. Mike Griffith joining us on the Stanley Fencing and Gates Hotline. Is the offseason in college football going to be more interesting than the regular season?
It's going to be hard to tell. It was last year. The last 12 months have just been nothing but college football craziness. So I would imagine with these pressing issues, I mean, there are some really important stuff to iron out. We probably have a lot of talking points coming our way over the next 4 or 5 months. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Joel, are you paying any attention to Purdue, Illinois? Are we in double overtime between these two top 25 Big Ten teams?
Yeah, it would appear to be that way after it seemed like Purdue was kind of handling business. Illinois started to claw its way back, and now we've got a top 20 double overtime game happening on Fox right now.
I like it. NBA going on today as well. The Celtics had a bad start, now up 15 in the fourth on the Pelicans. Knicks not doing so well at home against the Hornets, Wizards, and 76ers. And double overtime with Purdue up by three now on Illinois. We'll continue on Sports 180. Half an hour to go, and then Sports Talk will take over at 3 o'clock right here on 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. It has been a busy Monday afternoon with so much to talk about coming out of Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. One game to go tonight. Heather, we both like the Rams to win, so that means the Cardinals likely will in the matchup in Los Angeles.
Well, I feel pretty good hitching my horse to your wagon. So if it was just me, maybe if I would have gone first and you would have agreed with me, I would feel worse about it. But yeah, when you look at it, I do think the Rams are the better team. And we talked about it a little bit ago. One of the reasons why I think I'm pulling so hard from them is the Rams have seemingly been the big disruptors in what's the norm in the NFL, you know, not relying on first round draft picks, going out and getting key personnel with those first round draft picks, just like handing them out like they're Tic Tacs. They're like, yeah, we'll trade you a what if for a known commodity in Brandon Cooks or Jalen Ramsey. Right. So I do find what they have done fascinating. With their playoff prowess. I mean, they've been to the playoffs the last five seasons under McVay, but there has been a ceiling with Jared Goff as the quarterback. So what did they do? They went out and changed that conversation. We'll see if Matt Stafford is going to be the answer to get them back to the Super Bowl.
How about last night, the Chiefs, with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter, we're down 7-0. The Steelers had a defensive touchdown. T.J. Watt with the scoop and score for touchdown to go up 7-0. So 6 minutes to go, 7-0 Steelers. Less than 6 minutes into the third quarter, 35-7 Kansas City Chiefs. That was quick work at the end of the second quarter and then at the beginning of the second half to put the game away.
The ability of the Chiefs to score like that, it was a couple of years ago that they just completely erased a big deficit to the Houston Texans, right? In the playoffs, with Deshaun Watson still playing for Houston. And I just remember being like, oh my goodness, these guys can score at will. Like, how do you stop that? You have to pace with them. The Steelers were never going to be able to do that. That's why they were such a big underdog, and the Chiefs easily covered that. But it is impressive how quickly Pat Mahomes and his group can score. I mean, it's like they're always running 2-minute drill.
Now, this week they will go up against a team that is more explosive and has more firepower at the quarterback position, and that's the Buffalo Bills.
And the Buffalo Bills were so exciting. Josh Allen, the 5 touchdowns, them just dominating. We talked about it. They kind of exercised a lot of demons from over the past 20 years that were basically at the Patriots' hands. And so I felt like that was just such a huge win for the team, for the franchise, for the city. It looked like it was just a rowdy environment. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick was at the game, and he was recorded in the stands with his shirt off and gloves on, like yelling when the Buffalo Bills won. I saw that floating around on Twitter, so that was cool. I think that's going to be a fun matchup because Buffalo can score with Kansas City. And I think there will be a lot of intrigue for that matchup. And I still don't want to see Kansas City get to the Super Bowl. So if the Bills can be that disruptor, I would like that.
Yeah, this is a rematch from last year's AFC title game, which Kansas City won without too much trouble in that game. Now, Buffalo went in last year with a ton of hype of, okay, they can beat out the Chiefs, and the Chiefs knew that, and Buffalo just wasn't ready. I would think they're more ready for the chance to do that. And it was kind of a weird season where the Bills, they were losing games where maybe you didn't expect them to, the game against the Titans. And that's, you know, both of these teams losing against the Titans is why they are going up against one another this week. And the Titans have the Bengals. I don't think it's an easy game for the Titans, but it's a pretty favorable draw, I would say, considering the injury issues Cincinnati has. They're still not that experienced, and they beat a Raiders team that's not as good as the Titans. So yeah. Kansas City and Buffalo, they have to play one another, and then the winner will have to play the Titans most likely to get to the Super Bowl. It's a more favorable road, which is why you want that one seed for Tennessee.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, the fact that either Kansas City or Buffalo most likely is going to have to come to your place to play, I mean, that definitely means something. And look, you referenced the AFC title game last year where Kansas City was the higher seed and they made quick work of the Buffalo Bills. Do you see that in reverse this year with Kansas City having to go to Buffalo? I mean, because isn't that game is played in Buffalo this week, correct? Or is it in Kansas City? I might have that mixed up. Okay, is it in Kansas City? I think is the higher seed. I think I had that up in my mind. So
Kansas City will host.
Yeah, forget that point. That is not going to happen. but I do think the Bills and what they showed, in the previous matchup, that they should be at least more prepared for this Kansas City team, whose run defense is still not very good. Like, their defense has gotten better throughout the season, and their offense, for sure, at the halfway point just clicked and it fell into place. And everybody that was questioning Kansas City was like, yeah, we shouldn't have questioned them. So their offense is going to be very, very good. But I don't know. I think Buffalo proved against the Patriots they can score against a pretty good defense, and Kansas City better be ready for them.
I love the matchup. We'll see. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen. Mahomes he's arrived and he's established himself as one of the best. It's like it's Brady, Rodgers, Mahomes. Most agree. Josh Allen is kind of on that next tier. And the next thing he has to do is win these kind of games, right? You need to beat somebody like Mahomes. You need to advance, keep advancing in the playoffs to then get the credit and the, the recognition that these other top quarterbacks have. They've won the big ones. And winning this game doesn't mean you go win the Super Bowl, but if you beat somebody like Patrick Mahomes, more people are going to pay attention to you.
I think you're right. I think it's such a measuring stick game of, like, I mean, think about all the milestones Patrick Mahomes has hit and the age that he is. I mean, he is still so young, has so much football in front of him. So if you're another young guy and you're trying to establish yourself in that same vein, well, yeah, of course you got to go out and beat them head to head and lead your team, especially if you could lead them in the fourth quarter to a win. I think that buys you just so much credit among the national media. Then people start talking you up. Then you become the guy that, you know, has to be beaten. So, but man, Pat Mahomes, he's just like the torchbearer of the NFL right now.
Well, not Tom Brady.
Well, I mean, Tom Brady, I still consider, like, where you're at in your career. I mean, Tom Brady's still one of the most popular players. Aaron Rodgers is still one of the most popular players. But I think when you look at the front view and the rear view, there's just so much rear view in Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers' career. Like, Pat Mahomes, like, make him the face. Like, look who's on so many of the primetime commercials. Now, all three of them get all their deals. Don't get me wrong. You're going to see all three of them, but I still feel like you see Pat Mahomes the most.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, we've seen some commercials with Rodgers and Mahomes. We might see them in the Super Bowl. We'll see. Still a couple of rounds to go before then, and a wild card game tonight, the Rams and the Cardinals. We'll come back for the final segment of Sports 180. We'll hit the Power Poll, the top winners and losers out of the weekend, and then Sports Talk will take over coming up at 3 o'clock right here on 99.1, the Sports Animal. This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us. We've had a fun afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow at 12 o'clock. Heather, we will have a lot of fun tomorrow at Frazier's Carpet One.
Yes, cannot wait to see Kevin Frazier and all the wonderful people. Shouts to them, too. They recently completed a project in our home. Oh, my gosh. We have beautiful brand new carpet in the boys' room. And let's just say the wrestling matches and reading story time all got more comfortable with the carpet that they put in our home. So love the job that Frazier's did. Can't wait to talk about them all day tomorrow.
We'll be a blast tomorrow at Frazier's Carpet One. Heather, good news for you to close out today's show. Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones, speaking on the radio in Dallas earlier today, said he expects Mike McCarthy to remain Dallas's head coach, saying absolutely very confident that McCarthy will be back for a third season.
Well, what did Ron White say? You can't fix stupid. So there you go.
Well, there's also trust in the process.
Yeah. Hey, that's all well and good.
Have the Sixers won a title yet?
what a great line, Joel.
They have not. Yeah, they have not.
Great line. Is their best player playing for him?
Well, Joel Embiid, yeah, he is.
Okay. But,
Ben Simmons is not.
Hey, Jay, catch us up. What is going on with Ben Simmons? Is he still, did he get the exemption? Is he like in the NBA's health protocols with like the mental issues that he was dealing with?
I'm not totally sure with his contract status and getting paid and all that. I'm not totally sure there, but no, I don't think anything's changed in terms of his desire to go somewhere else. Okay. I think the 76ers just need something that they feel comfortable getting back.
Yeah. All right, we'll keep trusting that process, and we'll apparently keep trusting Mike McCarthy. So there you go. Feeling good.
All right. So it was a disappointing loss yesterday, but good news to close out today's show with, that they're going to run it back in Dallas next season. Heather Harrington's here. Jill Silverberg, I'm Josh Ford, as we close things out with the Power Poll. All righty, our Power Poll today, the top five winners and top three losers coming out of the weekend. Joel Silverberg, would you like to lead us off with your list?
At number five for the top five winners, I've got the Chiefs. Pat Mahomes with a monster performance, 5 touchdowns on the day. We get a matchup with 2 quarterbacks that just threw for over 300 yards and 5 touchdowns each. Number 4, Dana Altman. This is not his best Oregon team, but over the weekend, they stunned UCLA in overtime, and it's win number 700 for Altman, so welcome to the club. Number 3, Ben Roethlisberger. Didn't get the win over the weekend. Congratulations on a fantastic career. Number 2, Josh Allen. We kind of talked about this, how his cold weather numbers have not been great. He goes out and just torches New England. A really good performance from Josh. That's got to be really encouraging for Buffalo as they get ready for Kansas City. Number 1, the Bengals. You end a drought like that, and there is reason to celebrate. It's the first time somebody can send a text message about a Bengals playoff win because texting was not invented the last time the Bengals won an NFL postseason game. 3 losers on the weekend. I could have made this entire list about aspects of the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't. You're welcome, Heather.
Thank you.
Number 3, the Australian Open / Novak Djokovic, depending on which side you're on. It's not a good look, whoever's side you're on with all of this. And Josh, you kind of mentioned it earlier in the show, players are annoyed with it. Nadal has spoken out against it. He's not happy. Naomi Osaka's, everybody's just tired of hearing about it. The tournament underway, and the biggest storyline is the player that's not in Australia. Number 2, Baylor men's basketball. Really? And number 1, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott endorsing fans, throwing trash at officials. Micah Parsons, I don't know if you guys mentioned this, Micah Parsons talking about how he felt like the officiating was biased because people love to hate the Cowboys. That's the softest thing I have ever heard. And Will West throws out the word soft about 15 times a day. That's one of the worst things I've ever heard in a post-game press conference after a loss. So Cowboys number one on the weekend.
What player was it, too, that thought that the fans were throwing trash onto the field because they lost? Like
Prescott.
Dallas lost. Okay. And then they said, no, I think it was because of the officiating. He was like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, keep doing it then.
That's your franchise there, Heather.
Cloud show.
By the way, we're starting to find something that correlates. Tennessee Vols with some throwing of trash. Dallas Cowboys fans with throwing of trash.
Know.
Common denominator, Heather Harrington.
I promise
and Brian Rice.
I've never thrown anything onto any sort of playing surface. No way. All right. My top five winners. I'm going to go with Tom Brady. 35 playoff wins now for the GOAT. The next couple highest, you got to combine those to try and get to Tom Brady's number. Just absolutely.
And there's a gap, by the way, now. If you take winners two and three, they're still not all that close to Tom now.
It is wild. Number four, Joel is absolutely right. The Bengals getting that first playoff win in 31 years. I put them in at number four. I put the Kentucky Wildcats at number three. I feel like they leveled up with the big win over Tennessee. Now we really know what their high end, their upside is. It was very impressive. I've got the Lady Vols coming in at number two, last undefeated team in SEC play. So good on you. 17-1, best start since 2007-08. And that was a national championship year. So fingers crossed there. And number one, I put the Buffalo Bills. I felt like Josh Allen and those guys really had something to prove, and they went out and proved it. Also beating the Patriots had to feel really good for the fans and the players. My top three losers, I put Tennessee men's basketball in at number three. Number two, I put Joker for being deported, the Aussie Open, just what a big mess all of that was. And number one, apparently for multiple reasons, including like, hey, let's just double down on Mike McCarthy, I did put the Dallas Cowboys.
Man. Tough weekend there. My top five winners. I'm going honorable mention to the Bengals. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of being in the top five.
Haterade.
Yeah, the officials won them the game anyway. That's how I see it. I have Lady Vols number five, as they have their best start since the 2007-2008 season. Man City number four. They have created some great separation there in the EPL table. I have Kentucky men's basketball number three. That was quite a showing, 107 points on Saturday. I have the Buffalo Bills number two. And then while this could change, I guess, with tonight's result, the only road winner this weekend, the San Francisco 49ers. Road teams have done well in wild card weekend in recent years. Not this year, at least to this point. So the 49ers, the lone road winner. Losers from the weekend. Joel, I went Baylor and USC. Started the week unbeaten, two losses apiece. What's happened there? Patriots number two, that was an ugly showing. And then the Dallas Cowboys, they are sweeping the top loser spot from the weekend. That is our Power Poll, top five winners and top three losers from the weekend. For Joel Silverberg and Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Thank you for hanging out with us today. As we mentioned, tomorrow's show will be live from Frazier's Carpet One from 12 until 3 on Western Avenue. We'll see you then. Sports Talk is coming up next with so much to cover this afternoon. Have a safe rest of your holiday here on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.